SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, about 15 minutes in. So we'll spend 10-15 minutes each with Ed DeRosa, John Marshall from Colonial, and Mike Welch. Talk about Gulfstream. Ed, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. Greetings of the season, our last Friday show of the year.
Thank you. Same, I guess you're... been celebrating a little longer than I will have been in a week or so, but yeah, happy holidays to everyone out there, and looking forward to a big 2019 already.
Absolutely, and some of the things that that hint at the year. We've been talking about the 2 year olds and the performances last weekend. Starlet and Futurity bode well. We got another three-year-old to be race when the Springboard Mile, when those juveniles go on Sunday, last opportunity for points, 10 points. And you got to think that at some point, if they're going to keep offering 400,000, Ed, Springboard Mile is going to get itself a grading, you know?
You would think maybe this will be the year. Gravitos is... injury, unfortunate. He definitely looked like the type that could go on and make some noise. And Combatant just ran into some heavies and ended up certainly not being grade one quality. But last year looked like a deeper year and just didn't pan out as it sometimes doesn't. But got another 11 horse field this year, and I think a worthy conclusion to the 2 year old portion of the 10 point series, with Steve having five in here, and really he's Hall of Fame horseman, one of the best in the game. He has had some futility winning these points races, so it's an interesting storyline with him having five of the 11, and I'm sure he'll be very active in the fairgrounds and Oaklawn circuits as well. But definitely would like him to snap this point skid that he's on.
That's a good point. I had forgotten last year that we were at around this point on the calendar, and there was this expectation that that Asmussen was going to dominate and was going to have a big run on the Classic Trail, and Dale Romans too. Dale and Asmussen had. They had 6, 7, 8 horses that we were, kind of tracking. So that serves as a little bit of a cautionary tale, when with everybody, more or less, looking at Baffert and just assuming that that the Baffert juggernaut is going to overwhelm things when we get into the new year and onto the trail in earnest.
Yeah, that's a great point with Baffert, and we've been down this road before. With Pletcher as well, and Nick Zito is a trainer who had 5 in the Derby at one point back in Bellamy Road's year 2005. So at different points in the calendar, we sort of have these. Oh, how does this guy lose? They do. And Baffert certainly looks somewhat invincible, but very cautionary. Both looking at what Asmussen and Roman's numbers are, and really, Steve, just the development of the horse, we're at a stage, for better or worse, where, one maiden win is enough to all of a sudden be on the trail. And we've sort of been there a while with some of the bigger barns, but especially now with, lesser campaigns and the way horses are pointed to the Derby just being so different than even 15 years ago, it's easy to sort of get caught up in because Baffert's won all these maiden races and, we take all these horses around the trail, but the reality of it is, 2-3 months down the road, it's hard to see even Bob holding this type of hand. So as bettors, we know they're going to get bet, and hopefully we find the right spots to go against and save our money when we think they're the real deal. Is I thought Improbable last week was tough to back at the price, but also didn't try to beat them. So you know, those are the important decisions we face week in and week out. But the Springboard Mile, really a good case of maybe stepping out a little bit, because with 11 horses, definitely some prices to be found.
Well, since we went in this direction, take us through. Give us your thought.
Yeah, well, I'll point out, get two plugs in before I get to the race, but the Twin Spires promo this week is at Remington, show place win on the final three races of the 12-race card, and kudos to them for going out with a bang. Definitely some compelling races, top to bottom. Promo is on that final pick three. And then Gus Alonso, spotlight selection, Gulfstream Saturday, and then he did do the Remington card Sunday, and I know he had a big hit already this week, so hopefully he's sending us all into the new year with some decent scores. He had the pick five closing week at Churchill as well, so Gus heating up just in time for some holiday shopping, so make sure you get his picks this weekend at Gulfstream in Remington.
And Gus, I'll have it at our website. Gus looked at the Stronach 5, too, today, so we'll put that up as well.
Very good. Yeah, dollar pick five, you know, some call them the competition, but when a bet's good, we want everyone getting involved, and you can play that at Twin Spires, and I've had fun with it when I feel there's an opportunity. So, yeah, definitely check Gus's stuff out. And dollar pick five, it's a good bet, no denying that. And I think some opportunities on Sunday, as I've hinted at. I don't love either of the two favorites, Steve, in the Springboard Mile. And one thing I'll point out in general with Remington, they have a lot of stakes races Sunday, a lot of two-turn races. Definitely speed, a slight edge, too, just looking at what's won at the meet. Inside posts have been decent as well. I am going to buck that trend, though, in the Springboard Mile, because there are what I identified as three front-end types and then probably another six pressers. So that's nine of the 11 horses, and I just think Tobacco Road stretching back out off that Clever Trevor 7-furlong race, sharpened up with the long one-turn route. Now he gets the two-turn mile at Remington. I just think he's going to be the one running late. There is speed in there. It's down inside. He should save ground from the outside. Hopefully he gets room. That is always a concern with the big fields when you're the dead closer. But Ramon Vasquez, 24% at the meet, has done well with Steve. A lot of good signs at 15-1 for me to go with Tobacco Road for the Asmussen Barn and snap that points losing streak Steve's had.
Nice.
But you know, that's the top pick, and I wouldn't hesitate to bet to win at that price. But I do have to say, I mean, Bankett, Kelly Green's horse, whose name's escaping me right now, just look to be over bet. I think Dunst is absolutely usable at 10-1. Very easy to throw out his last race in the slop. Temple City, not really a slop sire. Different dynamics than he faced in the Spendthrift. If he runs back to that Spendthrift race, I don't care what figure maker you use, that number it absolutely wins the Springboard Mile, and I think we're getting the right price to find out. Only concern is with the outside post and so much speed. Maybe he gets caught wide. So I do like Tobacco Road on dynamics a little better. But from an exotics wagering standpoint, I'm definitely looking to beat the top two choices. And Dump is definitely going to be one that will feature prominently with Tobacco Road for me.
James pointed out Dump as well, that going to look to a rebound from the Jockey Club miscue.
Yeah, I definitely think we're getting the price to find out. I don't think the two choices will be as far apart as the morning line suggests for Kelly and Steve, but I do think they will be the top two in an 11-horse field. If you can beat them out, you give yourself a shot. So definitely thinking vertically, which is pretty rare for me. I'm a big multi-race wager player, but I think in the Springboard Mile it's going to pay off to look in the exotics. And then I will mention the two races around it as part of that Swiss Fires promo. Race 10, I do like number two. And is it Cowgirls? I had it memorized, and now I forgot I'm walking. But it's the number two in the 10th race. But I mentioned speed and the inside being good, and this is where I am going to go with it. 7-2, second choice. And I think the favorite is vulnerable to the trip that the inside horse could get. So I think it's Cowgirls Have Fun That's my pick in the 10th race to kick. Is that right?
Cowgirls Like Us.
Oh, Cowgirls Like Us. Well, they have fun, too. We'll have fun.
Exactly.
And then in the nightcap, going to swing for the fences to close out the meet. Pinson fits that profile at 15-1, gets the rail, has shown speed. There's another horse in there who's shown a lot of speed as well, but who really backed out of it when pressured last time. And this feels to me like at 15-1, I'm going to make a play on Pinson where even if there is a little tussle early, if it shakes free from that, just might be too hard to catch. And I've seen that at a big price before where you think, oh, well, someone else will go with them. And if they dispatch them, they get brave and they just go on with it. And I think 15-1, sure. There is some talent behind, but I think with the rail, just maybe gets brave at a big price. So we'll look to close things out. That showplace win promo, you can use as many as you want to show and place, but you have to get the win on the nose. And I think if Pinson were to win, you have a chance of scooping the promo. So 15-1, that's the strategy there.
Okay, that's a viable way to go at it.
So that's my look at Remington. Haven't looked at much else. Big part of it is I saw a lot of Twitter chatter about expected rain, really from Fairgrounds to Tampa to Gulfstream this weekend. So I was less enthusiastic about digging too much into the Saturday cards without knowing the condition of the turf, but. Looking forward to definitely the Springborn Mile. I don't usually get too hyped for vertical opportunities, but I just feel like being against those two favorites, chance to close the weekend with a bang and the meet at Remington.
I like it. Well, and the season. Ed, thanks so much, and we'll look forward to a big 2019. And to everybody at CDI and at Brisnet and Twin Spires, best wishes for merriest of Christmases for you and the family. And we look forward to talking next year.
All right. Yeah, happy holidays to everyone listening out there. Really appreciate what you do as well, Steve, and looking forward to breaking bread somewhere along the Triple Crown Trail together.
Absolutely, and we're going to get you onto that Sonoran hot dog.
100%.
That's got Ed DeRosa written all over it.
Well, if I don't get to Arizona, at least Sid can make me one when I'm at the Belmont.
They're perfect, right? Because Sid created one. That's right.
Yeah.
I love it. Ed DeRosa, thanks, Ed. EJXD2. Let's take a break. Got a half an hour to close out today, and John Marshall is going to join us. Revolutionary Racing, the licensing complete in Virginia and set for August. 5 weeks of racing and some big pots and a new future for Colonial. John Marshall next, and Mike Welch to close out this busy weekend preview.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California thoroughbred racing action continues Thursday through Sunday at Los Alamitos Racecourse with more stakes action coming up on December 15th and 16th. First post is 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific Time. The weekend action will feature the Soviet Problem Stakes on Saturday, December 15th and the King Glorious on Sunday, December 16th. All of the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Racing fans, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick Fours continues. The wager has been well received and the pools figure to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional Pick Six wager. And when the sun goes down, the lights turn on at Los Alamitos with nighttime quarter horse and thoroughbred racing action every Friday through Sunday night. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Great racing is in store at Los Alamitos Racecourse through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Let's go! For more info, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, After this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Christmas spirit grows with each new day, and it's so close but seems so far away. Yet it comes only once a year, and for you know it, it's already here. The streets are filled with laughter, and so many hearts are gay. Everybody helps to make the season bright.
We're back at the races.
Turn on their Christmas lights at night.
And, Zoe Deschanel, the duet she does, was the, what are they called? Him and she, or her and him, or it's something like that. It's something cute. Thank you. She and him. There it is. I knew it was some oddball combination of pronouns. And happy to welcome John Marshall and Revolutionary Racing, the story that evolved out of Colonial and out of Virginia, literally from the ashes. And I don't mean when they're going to burn the turf course, but it is so exciting that all the plans came together and really in rapid fashion. And yesterday, the Virginia Racing Commission issuing the licensing, and things are set for an August kickoff and racing returns after 6 years to Colonial Downs there in New Kent, Virginia, about as great a turf course as there is in the game. John, congratulations to you and the partners and all the Virginia racing interests, Virginia Equine Associates, the horsemen. Very exciting developments.
Good morning, Steve, and thank you. Colonial Downs and Rosies, about ready to get started on August the 8th. It has been a journey, and I got to tell you, this is probably the biggest development in horse racing that I've seen since the emergence of Kentucky Downs. And it presents a great opportunity for not just Virginia, but for the entire industry.
From the origins, we knew right away that something was brewing when this started to happen, and it was amazing how quickly it all came together. I mean, talk about the origins, John, and the way the Revolutionary Racing team came together, and then putting the elements in place that made this happen. The state government responded, very, very well to all of these developments, and it seems like everybody that had a hand in it did exactly what was necessary.
Absolutely. Your Colonial Downs in New Kent, under previous management, sat dormant for way too long. The VEA did
did an astonishing job keeping an industry together, along with the Virginia Racing Commission, through the last 4 or 5 years of no live racing. So Revolutionary Racing, headed by Larry Lucas and Prentice Salter, saw an opportunity. They came into Virginia, did some investigating in Richmond, and formed some partnerships with the VEA, and started thinking, how can we bring back live thoroughbred racing in Virginia? What would it take to do that? So historic horse racing is in vogue in Kentucky, as we all know, and the Revolutionary team started to look at historic horse racing prospects, identified an opportunity, and began to work that opportunity through the General Assembly, who warmed right up to it and said, wow, yes, look at what Kentucky has done with through Kentucky Downs, and look what it's done for horse racing in Kentucky. Let's take a look at that model and see if it can apply to Virginia, and it certainly did. So the Revolutionary team, they deserve all the credit in the world, did the work. That's what's involved, doing the hard work to get something done. That's what they did. And here we are with a tremendous opportunity to reopen Colonial Downs Racetrack and a network of satellite wagering facilities that will have full card simulcasting and HHR technology that will be able to fund purse levels to allow us to have the elite boutique turf meet that all Virginians are envisioning.
The facility itself, and for those that have never been down, you've doing a complete renovation, and that work was well underway. I saw an article back in the fall, back maybe in September, that what was going on with the building, and so it'll be an entirely new Colonial Downs for those that are going to visit. The schedule originally seemed to be leaning towards September, John, and now you seem set on an August-September slate, 5 weekends essentially, 15 racing days for this first year, Friday, Saturday, Sundays with the enormous daily purse structure that is kind of eye-popping.
Yeah, when we look ahead into 2020 and beyond, we're targeting 30 days of live racing. And we worked backwards from the last weekend of October, which is when we wanted to end. And that brings us up into mid and early August, 3 days a week. But for 2019, we're going to debut with 15 days. And we said, okay, which 15 are we going to use? Are we going to use the front half or the back half for 2019? So when we look at those two date sets, we chose the most Maryland-friendly version, which is the front half, where we'll straddle Timonium with dates to be the least impactful to Laurel and the Maryland Horsemen. It's the most horseman-friendly date set. With a 5 p.m. post, we'll be following Saratoga and starting at the beginning of Del Mar, so we'll have some p.m. interest in simulcast land. And the purse demand for that time of year, the first half versus the second half, is a little less demanding. For those August dates, we're looking at around $400,000 or $500,000 a day for the August 8th through September 7th dates. And for the second half in 2020, we're targeting $600,000 a day, of which time of year we'll run with Keeneland and Belmont to a lesser degree because their purse levels are a little bit lower that time of year. But in 2020, we'll be able to say we offer the second highest purse structure in North America during that time of year, which is a great emergence.
Undoubtedly, and you've already, of course, I assume you're going to get the all the stakes, all the displaced Virginia stakes get to come home, right? That'll be a big part of the schedule.
Absolutely. The Virginia Derby, the Virginia Oaks, the Commonwealth Cup, and Virginia sired and bred races are coming home to Virginia in 2019. In fact, the Virginia Derby is scheduled for Saturday, August 31st, 2019.
Excellent. So this is all, yeah, this is all going to fall into place. Do you have, you know, it's funny, I had Tyler Picklesheimer on before Turfway got started, and I did kind of ask Tyler, have the Revolutionary team gotten a hold of you? Do you have a racing office plan yet?
We're in the throes of developing our team right now. So we'll be meeting with people starting next week and soon after the holidays and assembling a team to support live racing, and they will be familiar names that your listeners are all familiar with, looking to pull together an all-pro, all-star cast to really launch horse racing in Virginia in 2019.
Unbelievable. In addition to what will happen on track, and we should mention, the facility itself, I think you're scheduled for a spring opening, right? You'll be able to bring patrons in for simulcast and to play, you know, to play the HHR games in April?
Yes. Yesterday, the Racing Commission actually awarded us two licenses. One license pertains to live racing, under the definition of a significant infrastructure in Virginia. And the second license is specific to historic horse racing technology. And our plan is to open Colonial Downs in mid-April for full card simulcast and HHR operations.
You've also get to install three more facilities, and I know you're looking at a variety of locations, one down toward the North Carolina border, and I think Hampton you seem set on a Hampton location, and what, like about 700 machines each, give or take, in some of their satellite locations.
That's right, Steve. Our growth plan has become a little more clear. We're going to assume management control of the existing VEA partnership OTBs on April the 1st, a little bit ahead of the new Kent opening. And to your point, Steve, we're going to be opening Rosie's in Vinton on April 30th, right after Rosie's at New Kent. The location after that will be Rosie's in Richmond on June 8th. Followed by Rosie's in Hampton on August 18th. And we're identifying another location to open the fourth quarter of 2019. And throughout all of that, we're opening the stable area July 25th, and we go first race post August 8th.
Nice. And for training, that's a great question, actually, for training purposes and facility use. I mean, how much more expanded dates to have horsemen on the grounds and you know, to utilize the facility that way as a training center?
Yeah, we have 1,000 stalls at Colonial Downs. And for 2019, we're going to open a stable area July 25th. Stall applications will most likely be circulating late May, early June. So those listeners that have interest in Colonial Downs, it's not too early to plan now. We'll probably race 80% or more on the turf, given the width of our turf course. We have 8 rail positions. Holds up really well. It's in remarkable shape right now. I'd call it race ready right now, this year. But in any event, the stable area will continue to be open until September 14th. And it was important to us and the horsemen in Virginia that we opened it with a wide enough span to make it worth an outfit's while to relocate and take up residency for 7 or 8 weeks. We seem to think that's the minimum amount of time where people are attracted to take up a temporary residency. And in 2020 beyond, that time span is going to double to 14 or 15 weeks, which makes it a really attractive option, not only for outfits coming from the Northeast on their way to Florida for the winter, but folks following Kentucky Downs, wrapping things up there that are not entered at Keeneland. They could come over to Colonial Downs and continue south after running some great turf races.
And, of course, the turf course just famed and so wide that you know, gives you all kinds of options. Is JD Thomas coming back as track super?
Absolutely. JD Thomas will be back in his glory. He's really excited. The Secretariat Turf Course is his baby, and he's been babying it all summer long.
Awesome. That's great. And, of course, JD is Jonathan's father, and there's a great rite of spring, and that is the photos of the burning of the turf course that then brings it in twice as lush for the racing season. I cannot wait to get down there, Jonathan. It's really exciting. I obviously, anybody that's listened to the show, you know, Deb Easter has you know, been providing updates, and the horsemen, they did everything right, and that included the certification program. They stepped up, and it's, you know, it's hard under the circumstances, the way things have evolved. They did an amazing job, and then you guys came to the plate, and you know, here's the result. So it really can't be more excited for everybody involved, and we'll obviously talk more in the new year, but Colonial Downs back for 2019 and beyond. So congratulations and best wishes for the holiday season to you and Larry and everybody, and we'll look forward to helping you get going in the new year.
Thanks, Steve. This is really one for the entire industry to get behind and root for. This is a big one for everybody. And you're right about the horsemen. They've done a yeoman's job keeping the industry going for so long. And if this topic is not a keynote at the National HBPA convention this year, I don't know what is.
Well, we'll be there too. So we'll look for you there. And I love it. Colonial, you know, it's a little difficult to get to. We got to, you know, that's always been, you know, part of the, you know, the element of what some of the frustrations or difficulties, because it is, you know, out by itself, but it's, you know, basically between Richmond and Williamsburg, and you know, it's easy to, once you get make the commitment to going, it's not hard to get to, but it's a bit of a unique locale, and really urge people to, you know, put it on their radar to come down, and I'm sure that it's going to be welcomed with open arms. I just saw from the media, you know, this week, in fact, John, that they're excited, you know, in the area. They're delighted with what's happening, and so we wish everybody the best going forward.
Yeah, 2019, it's a great year to be a horseman. It really is. You're going to have a lot of options and a lot of hope, a lot of things to look forward to. So go Colonial Downs and go Rosies.
Rosies is the brand name that they've attached to the facilities, and you can see it in the artist rendering. So Revolutionary Racing, and everything really kind of came together very quickly. Mike Welch is going to join us, and we'll close out our morning and the weekend preview back at Gulfstream Park. Mike, good morning. Oh, there he is. Mike.
I'm here.
There we go. There's Mike Welch. Mike, the real racing. I don't want to say anything negative about the first two weekends, but they were kind of specialized. Last week, the Clásico de Caribe, and that was actually looked like a very festive day, and the Claiming Crown. But tomorrow, really, the winter really kicks off.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, you know, the Claiming Crown is great, but they are starter allowance stakes, and you know, the Clásico, those horses are good in their own element, but, you know, they would not, most of them, or almost all of them, would not be considered stakes kind of horses here. Although we did have six two-year-old stakes and saw some promising efforts earlier on the card, some horses that, you know, we're going to see in the three-year races, maybe starting with the Mucho Macho Man and even the Holy Bull down the road. So certainly got a early glimpse of some of the horses that, you know, will participate in the bigger races early in the meet, at least.
Yeah, the horse of, particularly the horse of Stidham's, a classic fit, looks like he's something, and the first half of that card was okay. This card tomorrow, though, certainly with Audible basically tuning up again as he moves toward Pegasus, and doesn't look to have any real issues in this field, but he's the headliner on the card.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he is from a single horse standpoint. Although that Fort Lauderdale, just talk about loaded Grade Two races. I mean, that's just a spectacular way to end the day. But Audible is the big name here, just because of the Pegasus looming ahead. Although, we might see one or two of those horses at least coming out of the Fort Lauderdale, also in the Pegasus Turf Invitational too. So we can't forget about that. But Audible. Look, last time we saw him here, he won the Florida Derby, did it impressively, catapulted him into the Kentucky Derby, where he finished a pretty good third behind Justify. They gave him a lot of time off just to grow and recuperate from the early part of the season, and he came back with a big effort in the Cherokee Run. Trainer Todd Pletcher said to me, he's a different horse now. I mean, we remember going into the Florida Derby. He didn't train all that well. I mean, his works were very suspect.
That's right.
He came out of the Florida Derby, though, and trained much better going into the Kentucky Derby. And now, from all reports from Todd and Dave Norton up at Palm Beach Downs for our Clocker report, he just couldn't be doing any better. Todd said he's in the best form of his career. And he says, well, I don't take anything for granted. I'm pretty sure they expect to win this race and win it rather easily, and then move ahead and use it as a stepping stone for what Todd hopes will be an even better performance, his best performance yet, on Pegasus Day.
Well, beyond the start of the stakes, we then get into the pick five, and the seventh race, to just kind of pause here for a minute, Mike, what insight do you have into this maiden group? Because you've got some pedigree, including Supervillain for the team that brought us Jaywalk. This is a half to take over Target. And then you've got award winner making a second start, the Ghost Zapper Colt for the Ammermans, and Brian Lynch. And this is a half to Oscar nominated and Oscar performance. But there's a lot of interesting horses in this field.
Yeah, I mean, you'd probably have to think that award winner, maybe better down the road on the turf, considering his breeding. But, his first race wasn't bad, and he has the experience. Look, this is a mile race, and it's not easy for horses. First-time start is to go a mile out of the chute and win, and you do have some major contenders there. Babu for Todd Pletcher, not to be confused with Babu from Seinfeld. Rack Jin is trained extremely well for Bobby DeBona here. And I was going to get Irad Ortiz aboard. But I picked award winner. I don't think you're going to see that 8-1 morning line. I think he's going to be a lot lower than that. I just thought he's going to move forward with a race under his belt. And he's got some decent works at Palmetto's. He's got a bullet last time out of the gate. So he's my top pick. But it is an interesting race. There's no doubt about that.
What can you tell us about Victor Barboza? Because I find myself stopping and looking at his horses more and more.
I mean, look, he's been terrific here over the last couple of years now. I mean, his percentages in just about every category. He's great off the claim. He can win with a first-time starter. If you like a horse that Victor Barboza trains, it's certainly no hesitation going to the window from that standpoint, that's for sure.
Let's jump to the toughest race anywhere on the weekend, Mike, and that's that Fort Lauderdale. Unbelievable. But I tell you, there's not Nick Tamaro and I were talking. There's not a lot of pace in here.
No, I mean, I guess Black Type will be up close early, and that would give him a little advantage. And Glorious Empire, too, although, Glorious Empire is going to the lead in mile and a half and mile and three-eighths races. A little different when you turn back to a mile and an eighth. Things are maybe a little saltier during the early running. High Happy, you should be forwardly placed. He's been actually worked a couple of times with Audible, and watching the tapes of those work, he's been definitely second best in those works. So, it's going to be a interesting race. I mean, the 14-horse field, you're going to want to get some early position to try to avoid too much traffic. We've got five Grade 1 winners in here, if you count Cortello de Cordas, who's a Group 1 winner in Brazil. We've got five horses coming out of the Breeders' Cup. Visadero, who, you know, might have been the best of the Breeders' Cup mile, except for getting parked out extremely wide all the way around after breaking from post 13. No fault of his rider. He just got a bad break at the post draw, and looking at the eight pole, he might even win it. You know, Almanar was the runner-up in the Arlington Million to Robert Bruce, and has caught some kind of softer turf courses in his last two starts, so I'm looking for him to bounce back here with a big effort. 10-1 on him. I take that right now, but that ain't happening. Projected his training well. Kerbaum, Kieran is really high on him, and he thinks the added distance will really be perfect for him, that the Shadwell mile is a little short, that they're going a mile and an eighth will be right up his alley. So, you know, lots of options, lots of ways to go, and you know, in a race like this, the ultimate finish is going to be influenced by what kind of trips a lot of these horses get.
Well, and of course, the fact that Shug ended up drawing so poorly with both Dr. Mounty and Inspector Lindley, either or, I had an interest in. Knowing that they were running.
Yeah, he's got to be shaking his head after that position draw, thinking, "What do I got to do?" You know, and even Revved Up is trained pretty well for Georgia Brew. He's been here at Gulfstream with George's brother, and he's looked good here. Training on the main track, but he's going to have to find a spot to get. Someone's got to scratch for him to get in, and if he gets in, he's going to be posted outside anyway. So maybe they'll just kind of ease back and wait for another spot for him after the new year.
I did happen to just look in here. I pulled up your opinions for tomorrow, and you made Rusty your best bet, awestruck in the Sugar Swirl.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Dream Supreme that both she and Dream Pauline come out of was probably a little better field here. Obviously, if Vertical Oak ran in this race, she'd be odds on, as she was coming back out of the Dream Supreme to win a stake last week in New York. Both Awestruck and Dream Pauline got in a lot of early trouble. Arguable which one gotten more, but I think once they settled into the stretch, Awestruck, you know, kind of held a pretty safe advantage over Dream Pauline. So, she's got more speed than she showed in that race, and I think if she just races forwardly in here and gets a clean run, she's definitely too good for these. I would, you know, caution the Stormy Embrace. Looks like the controlling speed, and if she does get loose, you know, six furlongs, even though Kathleen said that's not her distance, if she's loose on the lead going six furlongs, you got to be concerned that she'd be tough to run down. And obviously she loves this racetrack, having won the Princess Rooney in pretty handy fashion here this summer.
Well, still time to buy the Clocker Report for the whole season. You can also, get an individual if you just play on Saturdays, but you cannot beat the work that Mike and the team, Dave Norton, up at Palm
He's
Beach
at Palm
Downs.
Beach, yeah.
And who's doing?
Donald Harris. Back
who's doing Palmettos?
Donald Harris.
Don Harris. Nice.
Last year, and he was at Oklahoma this summer, and he's back again at Palmettos. In his familiar spot.
Outstanding. Well, the DRF Clocker Reports and the full meet or a weekly or a daily subscription
or
purchase.
Any way you shake it, I think it's a bargain at whatever price they're being offered at.
It's exactly a special $12.95, especially today, for a day like
tomorrow. You know, about the Clocker Report, I read with interest that story about the new GPS system that they're testing for, timing works. And, it might not be a bad thing if they put that in, but you still can't, the GPS system still can't tell you if a horse, you know, broke out of the starting gate and worked into a 25-mile-an-hour headwind, or if the rider was, you know, had a handful of horse at the wire or was beating the horse silly down the lane. So whether we have that or not, I think there's still a place for the Clocker Report.
Of course.
The Clocker do a great job, you know, all over the country. I just got to get a plug in there for them. And it remains to be seen if the GPS stuff can be relied on, you know, on a daily, day in and day out basis. But the Clocker Report will live on regardless.
Absolutely. And well, and actually, Mike, in a lot of ways, if they, and we'll talk to Dave Siegel next week from Trackmaster, if that happens, it actually frees you guys up to not have to worry about the stopwatch. You could really focus, you know, instead of having to pick up this one and this one and this one at the quarter pole, and you can just focus on the work itself.
Right,
and
I mean,
maybe even get better notes. And
if you could rely on their times to be accurate, and if they can get you splits too, which are obviously very important. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
No, it would free up, especially during the busier times. But you know, if the technology is similar, say, to the Trackus technology that they use to time races, we've seen that doesn't always work. You know, there's issues there. So
that's true.
You know,
that's
if no one's sitting there with a stopwatch and the system goes down, then what happens? So, you know, there's always going to be need to the human element, just like the charts. You know, us old chart callers, they've got the new system where the Trackus does the charts, but every once in a while, things don't work out so well, and at least you have someone up there every day at every track that can fill in and make that chart for you in case the system doesn't work.
Absolutely. The fail-safe. Mike Welch, everybody. DRF Welch and the Clocker Report and the action at Gulfstream should be good tomorrow. And today, too. You've got, We're going to pull up and send you out into the race day and the race weekend. Thanks, Mike. And I want to thank Mike and John Marshall, Colonial, and Ed DeRosa, and Steve Anderson, Mary Rampolini, Nick Damro, and James Scully. HRRN comes your way 3 o'clock for action around the country and tomorrow. And we'll talk to you Monday and head into the last week of the year for us. Good luck. Gus looked at the Stronach 5. And I'll do the Gulfstream late pick 5 tomorrow. Absolutely. Good luck this weekend. Talk to you Monday.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California Thoroughbred Racing action continues Thursday through Sunday at Los Alamitos Racecourse with more stakes action coming up on December 15th and 16th. First post is 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific Time. The weekend action will feature the Soviet Problem Stakes on Saturday, December 15th and the King Glorious on Sunday, December 16th. All of the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Racing fans, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick Fours continues. The wager has been well received and the pools figure to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional Pick Six wager. And when the sun goes down, the lights turn on at Los Alamitos with nighttime quarter horse and thoroughbred racing action every Friday through Sunday night. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Great racing is in store at Los Alamitos Racecourse through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Let's go! For more info, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at pabred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.